So now in the next verse, this is verse 18, Prabhupada's discussing about a man who lives with a wife has a great responsibility in maintaining the members of the other social orders, brahmacharis, vanaprasthas, and sannyasis. Except for grihasthas, householders, everyone is supposed to engage in the spiritual advancement of life. So someone might read this purport and out of context. So look, Prabhupada's saying that we don't have to do spiritual life. He's saying, except we have an exception. There's the rule and there's the exception. You've heard that, haven't you heard this? There's a rule, but there's the exception. So Prabhupada's saying, he's giving us concession. He's saying, except for grihasthas, everyone is supposed to engage in the spiritual advancement of life. So I'm a grihastha. So? Well, yeah, I don't have to come. Why do you ask me to come to Mangalarti? Prabhupada says, I don't have to advance. You're a brahmachari, you have to advance. So people could really, devil quoting scripture, you could really get some mileage out of this, because almost everybody's grihastha. And they said, look, I read it in Prabhupada's books. I'm reading every day. Okay. Prabhupada, I'm going to follow your teachings.
We have a lot of brahmacharis converting.
Everybody's going to become a grihastha. So he's saying that, and therefore, the brahmachari, vanaprasthas, and sannyasis, they're so busy in engaging in spiritual life, they don't have time to earn a livelihood. So they beg from the grihasthas and secure the necessities of life, the bare necessities of life, Rolex watch, Mercedes car, whatever they need. Now they're supposed to live in a very bare necessities, being just a little bit simple life, simple living, high thinking. Then they cultivate spiritual understanding. By helping the other three sections of society cultivate spiritual values, the householder also makes advancement in spiritual life. Ultimately, every member of society automatically becomes spiritually advanced and easily crosses the ocean of nations. So, of course, Krishna conscious Vaishnavas, Grihasthas, are also supposed to advance in spiritual life and work diligently and hard to chant their rounds and study every day. And in addition to this financial responsibility of giving food or alms and money to the other three orders of society who depend on them. But the interesting thing happens, because someone might say, well, how do I make spiritual advancement just by giving donations or alms or food to the brahmacharis in the temple, or the wandering mendicants, or the vanapras, which aren't too many. And it works like this, that devotees are very dear to the Lord, and the Lord is adjusting and arranging every day. And in addition to this financial responsibility of giving food or alms and money to the other three orders of society who depend on them. But the interesting thing happens, because someone might say, well, how do I make spiritual advancement just by giving donations or alms or food to the brahmacharis in the temple, or the wandering mendicants, or the vanapras, which aren't too many? And it works like this, that devotees are very dear to the Lord, and the Lord is adjusting and arranging everything, because he's observing everything. He's a sakshi, sarva-shakshi, sarvato-panipadam, sarva-sakshi-shiromukam. Krishna's saying in Gita, everywhere are my hands and legs, everywhere are my eyes and faces. This is verse in chapter 13, possibly. Sarvatokshi Shiromukam. Everywhere are my eyes and faces. So Krishna's observing everything. And he's very pleased when we please his dear ones. Just as we may have a tenth cousin removed, and we try to, and I may do something for your cousin, and you hear about it. Oh, that's nice, you please my cousin, I feel some happiness. But if I do some direct service to please or to help your son, then you'll be very happy. Oh, you helped my son. He tried to get into that college and he couldn't get in, but you made a recommendation to the dean and he got accepted. I'm so grateful. So in a similar way, the devotees are Krishna Preshta. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya. Krishna Preshta Mukunda Preshta. Peshtalavi Sevyamana Swarami. This is the Abhideya Pranam Mantra to Radha Govinda Dev, right? Divya Brindaranya Kalpa Jumada, Srimad Ratnagara Simhasanasto, Srimad Srila Radha Govinda Devo, Preshta Alivi Sevyamana Smarani. Preshta Alivi. Alivi means gopi. Preshta means the Preshta Sakis, Parma Preshta, Lalita Vishaka Ashta Sakis. Very dear, very intimate, very close to Radha and Krishna. Krishna Sneha Adhika, the Sakis, more affection for Krishna. So the Guru is called Mukunda Preshta. Guru, I mean Krishna Preshta. That's the pranam prayer of the Prabhupada. So if we please the direct son or the dear son of the Guru, then we get so much benefit. As I mentioned, that when one gives to a Brahman, he gets so much return, Shastras are telling. When you get to a Vaishnava Brahman, you get more return. But when you get to a Mahabhagavat, or a pure devotee of the Lord, you get billions of times return. So therefore, by giving food and money to the devotees of the Lord, the Lord is pleased, and the Lord is residing in the heart of the Grihasthas and everyone, then he arranges for that Grihastha to get spiritual benefit. It's very tangible and it's very direct. The Lord arranges for the cooperative Grihastha, for the serving Grihastha who's helping the other three orders of life, he arranges that he becomes detached. He gradually develops a sense of detachment from his family obligations and from the general trend of sense gratification, especially centered around eating and sex life. Vachavegam, Anusakrutavegam, Jivavedam, Urupashtavegam. Krishna gives the power, he gives the strength to resist temptation. And he gives attraction. We become attracted because that's his power. He has the power of attraction and he can give it and withdraw it. Krishna can allow us to be attracted to him, and Krishna creates a situation where we're not attracted, where we become distracted. Something that's attractive can also become distractive or unattractive. A flower is attractive, but when it wilts and rots, it's not attractive. So Krishna, he gives the power of attraction, he allows us to be attracted, and he can withdraw it. From me comes remembrance, and from me comes forgetfulness. You want to forget me? I'll make all the arrangements so you can forget me eternally. If you want to remember me, I'll make arrangements so you see me everywhere. You see a spoon with holes in it, and you remember Radhakrishna Leela. I'll give you this remembrance. You simply see a spoon with holes in it, and I'll make you remember the Leela of Radharani carrying a pot on her head with holes in it. This is from Krishna. Matak smritir gyanam apohanam cha, 15:15 in Bhagavad Gita. You know this verse. So Krishna can make himself very attractive to you, so you give up attraction to everything else, including your wife. Or Krishna can be unattractive, so you become fully attracted to your wife and not attracted at all to Krishna. So therefore, these are the gifts. The gifts. It's called ashirvad, blessings. When the sadhus give ashirvad, they pray for the donor. They pray on behalf of the grihasthas. Oh Krishna, please bless him. He's very kind. He gave this donation or he helped our ashram. Please bless him that he becomes attached to you, that he increases his bhakti. And so these things happen because Krishna's in the heart. And a couple of things. He reciprocates directly with your seva bhav and your service rendered from in the heart. And he reciprocates with the prayers of the devotees you've served. Both sides. So the devotees are praying on your behalf. That's called Surid Ashirvad or Surid Kripa. Heartfelt blessings. It's mentioned in Nectar Devotion. If a great devotee just thinks about you in a favorable way, you'll become advanced. You'll increase your devotion for Krishna and increase your realization of Krishna. So that all happens just by helping, by giving donations. So this is what this purport means. Now this is, we discussed, or we've often heard, how the wife is the better half of the husband. This is very common in all countries of the world. Oh, my wife... two married men may meet, and someone says, oh, where's the better half? Where's your better half? Oh, I don't know. Maybe I don't see her for some time. It's better off for me. But this is a very ancient term. It comes from the Puranas. It's millions of years old. And this verse is telling us in verse 19 of this chapter 14 of third canto. Yamaho ratmano yardam shreyas kam masya manani. Yasyam swa duram adyasya pram charati vijvaraha. So it says ardam. It says atmanam ardam. It's right here, it's telling this story of. It says, O respectful one, a wife is so helpful that she is called the better half of a man's body because of her sharing in all auspicious activities. A man can move without anxiety. entrusting all responsibilities to his wife. So this is an ancient code, ancient idea, that the wife is the better half. And the purport Prabhupada says, by the Vedic injunction, a wife is accepted, it's an injunction, as the better half of a man's body. Why? Because she is supposed to be responsible for discharging half of the duties of the husband. A family man has a responsibility to perform five kinds of sacrifices called pancha yagya in order to get relief from all kinds of unavoidable sinful reactions that occur incurred in the course of his affairs. So these pancha yagya are described in Shastra. One is every day doing a fire yagya and worshipping the Yajna Purush, Lord Vishnu, and every day serving guests, serving food to guests, inviting him into the house, as Prabhupada's father, Gaura Mohande, was inviting four sadhus into the house every day and feeding them. Although he had a moderate income, he was not wealthy by any means. He was quite middle class at best, Prabhupada said like that. He said, we weren't wealthy, we were just average, but we had sufficient food. And there were some other activities, I can't remember. But in this age, the main yoga is Harinam. This is the age of Harinam. It's told in Bhagavatam. Yagya Sankirtana Priya Yajantihi Sumedashaha. If someone has good intelligence, Sumed, then he'll engage in this yagya. Yagya Sankirtan Yagya, chanting the holy name. It's the whole in one. Do this one activity and everything can be accomplished. So to do a daily homa and to worship Vaishnavas and to worship Brahmins and to feed guests and these other activities may be somewhat difficult in Kali Yuga. So the wife, and traditionally the wife would help in all those things. She would prepare all the food every day to feed the guests, and she would help prepare the yagya, and he would engage in the yagya. And like this, that's why it said the wife is a better half, because these are responsibilities. If these pancha yagyas aren't performed, then the man, especially, and his wife, husband and wife, incur so much sin. Because there's five types of sin that are, it's called unconscious sinful activities that are performed in the household. By sweeping the house, you kill so many living entities. By crushing spices, you kill so many living entities inside the spices. Like you saw, we saw this old Karela with worms inside. So same thing. You can have a piece of turmeric, and inside the turmeric, there's little bugs living, turmeric bugs. There's sarvagata. Krishna says, sarvastanagata. In Gita, there's living entities everywhere, sarvastan, in every place. In fire, there's living entities. In steam, and everywhere there's living entities of different sizes and dimensions. And jivas are spread everywhere. So even you'll find turmeric haldi bugs. They eat haldi. Can you imagine? It's unbelievable. So when you crush the haldi, then you crush the bug. And when you turn on the fire, or you make fire with wood, and some flies go in there, or some bugs are in the wood, some bugs are inside the wood. So in this way, there's five imperceptible ways we're killing living entities. When we breathe, when we walk. So the Jains, they cover their mouth. Some Jains cover their mouth with a white cloth. But they have to cover their feet with a white cloth also. Because they walk on the ground and kill so many ants. What about when they crush spices and they cook food and they sweep the floor? And when you wash with water, there's so many bugs and microbes in the water. When you wash with water, that's also one way. And whenever you kill a living entity, you get sinful reaction. So prayaschitta, the remedial measure, or to counteract this sinful activity, is enjoined that he must do pancha yagya. So the best yagya in this age, or the only yagya, is harinam, 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 eva kevalam, kalohan, estevan, 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 gati ranyata. But, unfortunately, we find that the grihasthas are not doing pancha yagya, they're not doing any yagya, they're doing paisa yagya. And they're counting, they're doing so many lakhs and lakhs of paisa yagya. They're chanting so many lakhs. Every day, counting 1 lakh paisa, 2 lakhs paisa, 3 lakhs paisa. But they're counting 1 lakh of nam yagya, 1 lakh? No. How about half? Hey, can you Can you give us 0.5 lakh today? No. How about can you give us 25,000? Can you give us 25,000? A yogi of 25,000 worth of nam? Okay, I'll try my best. That's 16 rounds. 25,000. If you make 25,000 rupees in your business, that's peanuts. All day long, 25,000 rupees. It's like, it's nothing. But nam, so at least the grihastha should come together when all schedules are compatible. Husband, wife, daughter, grandma, whatever, that are living in the house, and they should engage in Harinam Sankirtan at least for 10 to 15 minutes, half hour is even better. Everyone chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Kartal, Kol, Murdanga, Dolak. And this way they will be purified of all their sinful reactions and make rapid advancement in spiritual life. So at least if we can't do the Pancha Yagya, we can do the Ek Yagya, Sankirtan Yagya, which is recommended by Mahaprabhu as the one and only yagya. Harinam, 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 Kevalam. Kirtaniya Sadhari. Lord Chaitanya quoted this verse himself in Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's no other way, there's no other way, there's no other way except this Harinam. So this instruction, the Grihasas here, is that don't neglect the Harinam Sankirtan. Every day you eat, every day you sleep, and every day you have to do yagya. And so in this age, the yagya, to become purified and free from sin and attached to God and realize God, is Harinam. So, when a man becomes qualitatively like cats and dogs, he forgets his duties in cultivating spiritual values. And thus he accepts his wife as a sense-gratificatory agency. In America, they have insurance agencies. I'm an insurance agent. They have these terms. I don't know about India, but they have insurance agents. So the wife is a sense-gratificatory agency, open for business. So this is not the real role of the wife. Prabhupada likes this term. When the wife is accepted as a sense gratificatory agency, personal beauty is the main consideration. And as soon as there is a break in personal sense gratification, there is disruption or divorce. But when husband and wife aim at spiritual advancement by mutual cooperation, there is no consideration of personal beauty or the disruption of so-called love. Like they say nowadays, 90% of the marriages, the reason they get divorced is because of sex. There's no satisfaction in sex, husband or wife. So that's even a reason why you can get, legal reason for getting divorced. I'm not getting sex satisfaction, Your Honor. Please give me a divorce. Oh yes, that's very bad. Yeah. Yes, you should get divorced. So these cats and dogs are not satisfying me. So, but the Vedic culture, this is the most insignificant part of the relationship. The significant, just no satisfaction in sex, husband or wife. So that's even a reason why you can get, legal reason for getting divorced. I'm not getting sex satisfaction, Your Honor. Please give me a divorce. Oh yes, that's very bad. Yeah. Yes, you should get divorced. So these cats and dogs are not satisfying me. So, but the Vedic culture, this is the most insignificant part of the relationship. The significant part of the relationship is cooperation. I mentioned on some other tapes about grihasthas is that you learn a lot of good lessons that are valuable for living in the spiritual world. And the most valuable lesson is cooperation, operating co-jointly. Because the whole spiritual world, everyone and every object and every plant and tree and deer and parrot and peacock, and cuckoo, and every person, every coward boy, every coward girl, every elderly coward boy, all the animals and birds, everyone is cooperating for the pleasure of the center, for the pleasure of Krishna. So there's full cooperation there. And everyone is submissive, submissive to the desires and the will of Krishna, Krishna Icha, whatever he wants. Your will is my command. So in family life, we can, or we're forced to, or we have to, or we should, or we try to, or we can learn these qualities, which are very helpful for a devotee to enter the spiritual world. Cooperation, submission, and what's the other one? Another one I mentioned. Oh, responsibility. This is the, because you may be a brahmachari, you may be a little irresponsible, you just live in a temple, take a prasad. But when you're a grihastha, there's so much responsibility. When you're living single, it's like carefree life, and okay, my mother's cooking, and father's paying the bills, and I'm just eating, watching cricket, and having a good time, and going to school, and not much responsibility, study a little bit. And all of a sudden you get married, oh, my own bills, and car, my own house, and tax, and this, that. It's called responsibility, right? You have to become a responsible person, you have to grow up, you have to mature. So these are helpful qualities for a spiritualist, to be very responsible, be responsible for his spiritual life and his sadhana bhakti, and then cooperate with other, with the Vaishnavas, and with Krishna, the will of Krishna, have to cooperate, and be submissive. You're a very proud, independent person, doing your own thing, living independently, your own flat, but as soon as you get married, all of a sudden you learn about submission. Hey! Your wife becomes your commander. You don't want to submit to the temple commander and wait till you get married. Mm-hmm. You want to be independent of the temple commander and then wait till you get married and see if you can be independent of that temple commander. Should whack you with a frying pan. Temple commanders don't have any frying pans. Wife has a whole kitchen full of pots and pans. Pressure PC frying pan. FP, PC. FP means frying pan. PC is pressure. So this is the point. Marriage is actually, Om Prabhupada goes on, he's talking about this disruption of the so-called love. In the material world, there is no question of love. That's one sentence that can dismantle the whole universe. That's from Swargaloka to Patal Loka, all these lokas, so many lokas, including Earth planet. Everyone thinks there is love here. There is ideal love here, relationships here. Prabhupada is saying, in the material world, that encompasses quite a large area. He doesn't say the Earth planet. He doesn't say India or America. He says the material world. So material world, what is that? It's only Earth planet? It's material world? What does that mean?
14 planetary systems.
That means that's only one universe. 14 planetary systems. There's 7 planets above the Earth, 7 planets below. So that's all the material world. That's it. That's only one universe. And how many universes are there?
Millions, billions.
As many seeds as there are in a 100-kilo bag of mustard seeds. So each mustard seed represents a universe. So if you have 100 kilos of mustard seeds, how many mustard seeds is that? Can you count? Billions. So now all that together is the material world. And what's that called? Ek Pad Vibhuti. And one of Krishna's names is Tripad Vibhuti. Tripad Vibhuti means that, sometimes it's a name for Vamana Deva, but it means that three-fourths of his Vibhuti, or creation, or his energy is a spiritual energy, and this is only one-fourth. So in this one-fourth, which is millions of universes, and all those millions of universes which comprise the material world, there's only two worlds, right? There's a material and spiritual world. There's only one-fourth. It's a minority. It's like a dark cloud. And you see a bright sky, a very bright sky, but in one corner some cloud is floating there, coming from somewhere. So that's the material world, that one cloud. In the vast sky of the spiritual firmament. One little dark, all those billions of universes are one little dark cloud. And what's Prabhupada's conclusion? in that all that area, Ekad Vibhuti, in the material world, there's no question of love. Marriage is actually a duty performed in mutual cooperation as directed in the authoritative scriptures for spiritual advancement. That's quite a long, that's a powerful sentence, eloquent sentence with many, many facets to it. Marriage is actually a duty performed in mutual cooperation as directed in the authoritative scriptures for spiritual advancement. In other words, it's an ashram. Chaturvarnam, Mayashristram, Guna Karma Vibhagasha. Krishna created the four varnas and the four ashramas. Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprasthanyas. This is the Veda, the Dharma Shastras. In seventh canto of Bhagavatam, Narada Muni is describing the duties of the Grihastha, and the duties of the four orders of life. So this is the injunction, Yama Niyama, do's and don'ts of the Grihasthas. So husband and wife cooperate, they follow the Vedic Nished, Vedic Nisheda, the rules and regulations. And this way they make spiritual advancement, following the Vidhi, fasting on Harivasara, on Ekadasi, giving charity, serving Vaishnavas, doing Shraddha and Pind, offering Prasad, Mahaprasad to the ancestors, chanting Harinam Sankirtan, studying the scriptures every day, performing Nam Sankirtan. In this way they make advancement, because this is all sanctioned and authorized and directed by the Shastra. Therefore, marriage is essential in order to avoid the life of cats and dogs who are not meant for spiritual enlightenment. And this is text 20. There's two more texts about this Grihastha ashram and some of the nice instructions Prabhupada is giving us to consider. This is text 20. Yam ashrityendriyartin durjayan itar rashrame vayam jayema helabir dasyun durga pateryata. As a fort commander, we're talking about the temple commander, as a fort commander very easily conquers invading plunderers, by taking shelter of a wife, one can conquer the senses, which are unconquerable in the other social orders. Very interesting. Very interesting shloka. Ashritya, yam ashritya, ashraya, yam ashritya indriya, aritin durjayan, durjan aritin, the arati, arati, enemies, the aris, I would say, Murari, the enemy of Murari demon, aratin, itara, other than household, ashrama, jayema can conquer, helavi, dasyuan, means attackers, invading plunderers, durgapati, durgapati, the pati is a commander of the durga, durga means fortress. Of the four orders of human society, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, the householder is on the safe side. So now it's getting some encouragement here. Householders are getting some encouragement directly from the Bhagavatam. The bodily senses are considered plunderers of the fort of the body. The wife is supposed to be the commander of the fort. Well, there's no debate about that. I don't think any modern husband is going to argue. I already established that the wife is, if you don't want to surrender to the temple commander in Chopati Beach, then you have to surrender to the temple commander in the kitchen with the FP and the PC to enforce the law. Frying pan and a peace pressure cooker. You listen. So this is a very interesting point. You have to hear the whole idea. So the wife is supposed to be the commander of the fort, which means the commander of your body. The fort is your body. And therefore, whenever there is an attack on the body, by the senses. It is the wife who protects the body from being smashed. It's really powerful language, Rabbi. Smashed. The sex demand is inevitable for everyone. But one who has a fixed wife, that's interesting, he doesn't just say a wife. One who has a wife, he says a fixed wife. But one who has a fixed wife is saved from the onslaught of the sense enemies. A man who possesses a good wife does not create a disturbance in society by corrupting virgin girls. Without a fixed wife, a man becomes a debauchee of the first order and is a nuisance in society. Unless he is a trained brahmachari, vanaprastha, or sannyasi. Unless there is rigid and systematic training of the brahmachari by the expert spiritual master, and unless the student is obedient, it is sure that the so-called brahmachari will fall prey to the attack of sex. There are many instances of fall down, even for great yogis like Vishwamitra. A grihastha, however, is saved because of his faithful wife. Sex life is the cause of material bondage and is therefore prohibited in the three ashramas and is allowed only in the grihastha ashram. The grihastha is responsible for producing first quality brahmacharis, vanaprastas, and sannyasis. That's very interesting. So the grihastha, he has to think, I'm producing children, but I'm not supposed to produce cats and dogs. I'm supposed to produce sannyasis. The sannyasis are also human beings, and human beings require a mother and father to appear. So maybe one of my sons becomes a sannyasi, pracharak, and maybe another son will become a proper grihastha. Maybe another son will be brahmachari and then also get married or whatever, vanaprastha later. So here he's giving some nice encouragement that if the wife is proper and chaste, then he can keep everything within some boundaries. You have some question?
Yes, I was just wondering that how is it that a chaste woman can safeguard the husband if his senses are attacking him? I mean, what would she do if she's safeguarding him as in like doing from any illicit activity or from not falling prey to his senses, or how is she really safeguarding him?
Well, as far as I can understand from just this purport, although Prabhupada generally preaching that the man and husband, or proper devotee husband and wife, they should only combine for producing Krishna conscious children, otherwise they should follow the four Vaikuntha principles. But we see this purport, because it appears that he's saying that the man is feeling lusty for sex enjoyment. But the chaste wife who's fixed on the husband, she will provide, he will give his outlet there. In other words, enjoy with his wife and not go out in society and pollute innocent girls. That's what he's saying. He says, a man who possesses a good wife does not create a disturbance in society by corrupting virgin girls. It means he doesn't go out and enjoy sex with some unmarried girls and make them pregnant and all this problem. Without a fixed wife, a man becomes a debauchee of the first order and is a nuisance in society. Unless he is trained, is a trained brahmachari sannyasi. So it appears that he says he's on the safe side. Whenever there is an attack on the body by the senses, it is the wife who protects the body from being smashed. So this means that the man is being attacked, the husband is being attacked, or wife, whatever. But here it's saying wife. The verse is about wife. the husband is being attacked by sex desires. So rather than becoming a debauchee and running here and there with other people's wives or virgin girls, then his wife gives facility for expressing that sex desire. That's what it appears to be saying. And that way she protects him from being smashed, because he stays in, because that's permitted. Husband and wife are permitted. Although the proper function of that activity is for producing God-conscious children. So it's a kind of violation of the activity, but it's not as bad as if he runs out and violates virgin girls, which is a very serious sin. Because a debauchee and a nuisance. He's not saying, if he stays with his wife and enjoys with her, although it's not recommended, but then at least he's not a debauchee and a nuisance. That's what the purport seems to be saying.
Well, sometime back, Prabhupada said that only in grastha ashram, one in the shelter of his wife can control his senses. And not in the other ashrams.
Well, that's what it means. Controlling senses means he doesn't go out and, you know, grab everybody else in the street. As he said, it's also in the other place, says the man's nature to enjoy many women. And in the course of doing that, he'll commit adultery, which is a big sin, and he'll rape innocent virgins, which is an even bigger sin. Because, and you can take the other course, if you want, the next other course you can take is, as she preaches to him, says, cool down, take a cold shower, go on a fruit diet for 3 days. It's full moon, because on the full moon in Amavasya, the juices in the body become enhanced, so one becomes agitated. So that's why there's fasting before the full moon, to kind of cool down the body. Because when you fast, the heat in the body gets dissipated, especially when you do nirjal. So then it cools down the lust. So that's why Ekadasi comes a few days before Purnima and a few days before Amavasya. That's always like this. You know, it's Ekadasi, that's the 11th day, and 15th day is, you know, the 5th day is Amavasya or Purnima, you must be knowing. Ekadasi, then Dwadasi, Chaturdasi, then Amavasya or Purnima, either one. So it's like this, because on these 2 days of the month, all the liquid bodies of the world become increased. The oceans increase their tides, there's more fluids in the body, everything, all the... Wherever there's watery bodies, they increase. So the rasa, or the fluids in the brain, the cerebral spinal fluid and all these things, they increase, so one becomes very lusty. He becomes overheated. He becomes very emotional and lusty to enjoy his senses. So knowing that this is a monthly phenomenon that happens twice a month, and the sages, of course, they have this Ekadasi brat. So Ekadasi is supposed to do nirjal, but if you can't do that, then you do anukalp. Anukalp means you fast till sunset and take some fruits, which are very cooling. Cool down the body and reduce the tendency for lust. And that way you'll reduce the tendency to be, reduce the body's pushing to be very lusty, because Amavasya and on Amavasya, dark moon, and on Purnima, the lust increases greatly in the human body, because the increase in ras due to the position of the moon in relation to the earth. So the sages have described. This is the science. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati described this in one lecture in 1927. Because he knew astrology and the effects of the planets and the moon on the body, etc. He wrote one book, Siddhanta Shiromani. You must have heard. He wrote a book called Surya Siddhanta Shiromani. Because he was a great astrologer. That's why he got the name Siddhanta. Bhaktisiddhanta. He was Siddhanta because he wrote, and then when he became Sannyasi, took the name Bhaktisiddhanta. Because he wrote a book on astrology before he started the mission practically. So he's very well versed in astrology. And everything else, they say he was a walking encyclopedia. Remember? This phrase is there. Siddhanta Shiromani. Surya Siddhanta Shiromani or Jyoti, something. It was about astrology. So then you take the other courses. The wife says, oh, come on, you know, don't be so... It's Amavasya, it's Purnima, you're just lusty because of this. I know you're always lusty in Amavasya and Purnima, so I'm going to give you fruits. fruits are Ekadasi, and for 4 days you go on a fruit fest, cool down, relax, take a cold shower, go stay with the brahmacharis on Amavasya. Come back when you're cooled down. So she can preach like this. Okay, let's do, oh, you're feeling less, okay, let's have kirtan. Let's have a 3-hour kirtan. Let's go out and sell Prabhupada's books. Come on, let's get some books. Go out and take out your passion. Let's go sell books door to door. Let's go preach. So that could be there also. But I don't see that, and speaking specifically on this purport, I don't see Prabhupada saying it. He doesn't say that directly. But it seems to be indicating that the wife gets an outlet for that lusty desire, and then it keeps him within the boundary of the Grihastha Ashram, and he's not violating anyone else. That seems to be what he's saying. And Prabhupada is explaining that in the purport of text 21, chapter 14, householders living with wives enjoy the heavenly blessings of sense enjoyment. Are you enjoying the heavenly blessings of sense enjoyment? You're living in Swarga. Is your apartment another version of Swarga? Nandakanana Gardens? The householders living with wives enjoy the heavenly blessings of sense enjoyment, and at the same time, they have no fear of going down to hell. So there you have it. The man in the renounced order of life has no wife and may be driven by sex desire to seek another woman, or another's wife, and thus go to hell. In other words, the so-called man of the renounced order who has left his house and wife goes to hell if he again desires sexual pleasure, knowingly or unknowingly. And that way the householders are on the side of safety. Safe side, Prabhupada mentioned before also, in previous verses. The householders on the safe side. And here he's saying they're on the side of safety. Therefore, husbands as a class cannot repay their debt to women, either in this life or the next. Even if they engage themselves in repaying the women throughout their whole lives, it is still not possible. Not all husbands are able to appreciate the good qualities of their wives. But even though one is able to appreciate the good qualities of their wives, these good qualities, it is still not possible to repay the debt to the wife. So, now this, wives might take a lot of mileage out of this. But then they have to be acting as proper chaste wives, pativrat, following the pativrata and serving their husbands properly. And then, of course, the debt is repaid by giving them Krishna consciousness and fulfilling their duties.
Yes.
Because it initially started here by saying that he was henpecked. It said that this Kasyapa was henpecked. So that, now this is the last verse here, Prabhupada's talking about this relationship, Grihasthas. The henpecked husband may not be able to repay his wife for all the benefits that he derives from her. But as for begetting children by fulfilling sexual desire, it is not at all difficult for any husband unless he is thoroughly impotent. This is a very easy task for a husband under normal conditions. In spite of Kashyapa's being very eager, he requested her to wait a few seconds so that others might not approach him. In other words, it was evening time he said he should wait till a more auspicious time, otherwise some subtle beings may come at this time, may approach us and enter your womb, and we'll have some demon will be born. So, of course, that's what happened. That's the story. And he goes on to say, this is not a very good, this is a very inauspicious time, because horrible looking ghosts and constant companions of the Lord of Ghosts are visible. In other words, you could see that the spirit, evil spirits were moving around at that time. It's not a good time. This is Kashyap Muni and Diti. So I think that's about the end of particular paragraphs. I was speaking about cooperation and family life and how the husband and wife are helping each other. And especially there's a lot of emphasis on the benefit of the chaste wife. Now she's very helpful to such an extent that the husband can't pay the debt to the wife. Of course, the question comes, how does the husband pay the debt to the wife? What is the answer? The answer is this, that he lives an exemplary life as a Grihastha Vaishnava, devotee of the Lord, and he controls his senses by his surrender to Guru and Krishna, and his yoga abhyas, his sadhana bhakti, his daily promise to uphold the rules that he took, his initiation vows, and daily chanting of 16 rounds of Maha Mantra, and serving Guru and Guranga sincerely and enthusiastically day by day. So he makes tangible spiritual advancement through both through anartha nivritti to nishtha, to ruchi, and then his children grow up and he marries them properly according to all the dharma, proper dharmic codes. And then maybe he comes vanaprast. Then he gives up his sex enjoyment, takes the vow of celibacy as a vanaprast, an official vow which is part of vanaprast. And then he becomes very much absorbed in bhajan. And his wife becomes absorbed in bhajan. He may remain like that, stay in the house for his entire life, but becomes totally detached, like sannyas, like grihastha sannyas. He's living in the griha, but only for the convenience of having some place to stay, and maybe his wife is helping him, if his body is infirm, or she's cooking for him. But he's absorbed in bhajan. And by absorbing himself in bhajan, by Guru Kripa, Krishna Kripa, Nam Kripa, then he rises from the state of ruchi to a sakti, bhava, and prem. And that by chance, if he's very fortunate, grihastha, then he becomes pure devotee, premi bhakta. And then he dies. So if someone is a premi bhakta and they die, then 21 generations of their ancestors become liberated. Or 100, sometimes there's 14 and 21, 100 different. So that means how he pays back the debt to the wife, he liberates her. By becoming pure devotee, then she becomes liberated. Just by being his chaste, faithful, chaste and loyal wife. Maybe she never moved the beads at all. She was so busy with the kids and the house and all the work and doing everything so he could do bhajan. Cooking for him, cleaning, managing everything, doing everything. So he did bhajan. But she was not neglected. Krishna's so appreciative that she supported him. So he can pay the debt by becoming pure devotee and liberate his wife. And then she also does bhajan and becomes pure devotee, all the better. Double insurance. Double security. So these are some thoughts, more thoughts on household life. So everyone can, as they say, food for thought. Can consider these points, and certainly opens the Bhagavatam opens our eyes up, and especially there's some strong messages being given to the male members of the arrangement, the household men, the grihastha men, to appreciate what a fortress, the wife is called a fortress, and what do you call the temple commander, fort commander. The body is a fort and the wife is a commander. I was always joking, saying she's like the temple commander. But we tend to take the wife for granted and not appreciate her contribution But if the wife is chaste, that's the greatest asset that a man could ever hope to attain. Much more valuable than any unlimited amount of money. You have so much money and so much property and so much influence, but if you don't have a chaste wife, then you're actually destitute. You're actually daridra. You're very poor. There's no greater opulence for a married man than to have a chaste wife. Even if you have no money, you may go begging. If your wife is chaste and goddess of fortune is living with you, which means your life is fortunate. And if you take up spiritual life, then it will become spiritually fortunate. So everyone should be appreciated according to their contribution and according to their relationship and according to their position, and mutually cooperate with each other, be submissive to Guru and God, and submissive to each other, and take up the serious responsibility that every human being has to absorb ourselves in Krishna's service. Cooperate together for the center. The center is the Kula Devata. The Kula Devata is a family deity, the Gar Thakur. Gar Thakur, the Lord of the house, the deity of the house. So Krishna should be established as a center, not like the egoistic, chauvinistic modern man says, or even have phrases, a man's house is his castle. They have phrases like this. A man's house is his castle, it is his palace. In his house, he's the king. On the street, he's nobody. In the job, he's nobody. He's simply a paper pusher, pushing papers and paper clips. Or he's a puncher. Now you're not a paper pusher. You used to be a paper pusher. Now you're a key puncher. You don't push the papers. You punch the keys on the computer. Yes, my husband's the king of the house, king of the palace. Then he goes into the IBM multinational company. He's just another key pusher. He gets his 27,000 rupees a month and pushes the keys for the IBM. When he comes home, this is my house. I pay for this house. Now listen to me, everybody. Ahankara vimudatma kartaham iti manyate. Ahankara. Heavy ahankara. False ego. I am the doer. This is my house. Now whatever I say, you have to do. If you don't like it, out. It's my way or the highway. So this is obviously the wrong attitude. It's his house, Krishna's house. And I'm Krishna Das, and my wife is Krishna Dasi. And we cooperate. The Dasi and the Das cooperate for the boss. There's the Das, the Dasi, and the boss. And the boss is the Griha, the Kula Devata, Arishta, Radha and Krishna, Radha Govinda, Gornitai. And we cook for them, we sing for them, we remember them, we talk about them, we work for them. We keep a little money for ourselves, some for maintenance, some for emergencies. And then anything extra we use for the service of him and his family members, to serve the Vaishnavas. Buying books, book distribution, temple maintenance, sadhu seva. As we cover our necessities, we have money, we have investments to marry our daughter, we have payment, we have money for emergencies, or we take out insurance policies, however form you want to do it. Then more money's coming in, Krishna's giving us more. Well, Krishna's giving us more. Our Griha Thakur, he's giving more money. But we have our necessities met. We are happy. Simple living, high thinking. Why agitate our minds with a new TV, and then another TV, another couch, another car, another what? We don't. This one's sufficient. More is coming. It's coming from him. Let us give it back to him. We also deserve to keep some for ourselves. That provision is in the Shastra. You keep your quota. I'm sending you need 1 lakh, but I'm sending you 5. Now I'm testing you. What are you going to do with the other 4? Are you going to eat it? Sit on it? Are you going to give it back to me? I'm just testing you. Are you a bhakta or are you a bogey? Oh, my Lord, you're sending me 4 extra. Okay, here, take it. Give it to the temple. find somebody, some temple or whatever, go save or whatever. Krishna, why are you sending so much? Why is he trying to test me? Why are you sending me so much money? Oh, I have so much money. Oh, when I went, my dear wife, I've been thinking, we have this little Honda City car. It's not very nice. I know my business is making a lot of money now. And I always wanted to buy a Mercedes. It was always captivated my mind. I always had this lust to have a Mercedes. Because of the Pratishtha, I always wanted to say, I have a Mercedes. And other people say, oh, you have a Mercedes. Oh, you're a big man. You're really something special in this city of Bombay. I have to get your autograph. And I have to gloat over your car and be envious of your car. So, if you don't mind, I want to spend this extra profit to buy a Mercedes. Oh, yes, yes, that's a good. But you have to buy me a diamond necklace also. Because I always wanted a diamond necklace. Okay, yes. And you get your diamond necklace and I get my new car. This is all bogue. It's all sin. It's taking more than the quota. And you have to pay. If you take a loan from the bank, you have to pay the interest. So you're taking a loan from God. Stealing. Is it all His? So therefore, that's so important to establish the center, the proprietor, the verses I began with by saying that the proprietor of the house is Krishna. And I am Krishna Das, and my wife is Krishna Dasi, and my kids are little junior Krishna, Chota Krishna Das and Choti Krishna Dasi. And we're all meant to serve Krishna. Everything for Him. And he'll surely maintain us. That's what Prabhupada said. We have this faith. Everything is for Him. And I'm not sitting idle. Yes, Krishna, you do everything. No. I have my energy. You're giving me a body. I have to work. So I'm working for you. I get something I give to you. Anything extra. But the modern philosophy is it's all mine. I earned it all. It's my cleverness, my cheatingness, my skill in business. It's my good luck. It's my good fortune. Anyway, it's my good karma. Let me enjoy it. It's mine, these are my fruits, my endeavor, my fruits, it's all mine, the hell with God, what do I need Him for? And so, okay, enjoy now, pay later. If you don't pay now to God, then you'll pay later. Go to hell, become a cockroach, become a dog, become a fly, pig, dog, monkey, anything. But definitely not human being, because human being means dedicated to God. Human life means dedicated to God. That's human life. Anything less than that is animal life. So this family life is a great blessing. Safe side, Prabhupada said. Safe side. Sannyasis, brahmacharis, they can all end up in hell. Because there's no commander, no fort commander. And their fort can get invaded by Maya Devi. It's a very interesting sentence, Prabhupada said. Unless there is rigid and systematic training of the brahmachari by the expert spiritual master. That's some heavy statement. Can you show me somewhere in our institution or anywhere where a spiritual master must be going on? I can't say. I don't know so much. But it's a very demanding qualification, Prabhupada saying, that the spiritual master expertly, unless there's rigid and systematic training of the brahmachari by the expert spiritual master, so the spiritual master is doing a lot. And then, on the other side, the brahmachari must be obedient, because that's what disciple means, discipline, obedient. Unless the student is obedient, it is sure that the so-called brahmachari will fall prey to the attack of sex. So therefore, if these requirements are not met, if the brahmachari is not obedient, and if the brahmachari has not been rigidly and systematically trained by an expert guru, then what happens?
Falls to sex.
So now, look in any temple. Are the brahmacharis being expertly, are they being rigidly and systematically trained as brahmacharis by the expert spiritual master, which may be the shiksha guru, temple commander, or sankirtan leader, youth forum director, etc. And maybe going on, I can't say. So that's why it's purports Prabhupada saying that this is a safe side. That okay, I've taken this responsibility. Okay, I have the sex desire, all right, I get married. And then these three qualities are developed. Cooperation, surrender. I said shelter, but it's cooperation, surrender, basically. You learn how to surrender. Cooperate and responsibility. CRS. Make it easy. CRS. What does that mean?
Cooperation, responsibility, and surrender.
Surrender is, this is what I meant. Because they want to live independently as a brahmachari or live outside and do bhajan or whatever in Vrindavan. So they're avoiding some responsibility. The guru wants them to distribute books. They want to so-called live in Vrindavan, do bhajan. And they want to be independent. They don't want to surrender to the temple authority. They don't want anyone over their head. But then when you get married, you're forced to be responsible. You're forced to be surrendered. You have to surrender. And you have to cooperate. Oh, I can't cooperate with the temple president. I want to live independently. Well, get married, and all of a sudden you have to cooperate with your mother, your mother-in-law, your father, this, that. So these are three big qualities which one learns. He's forced to learn. And if he doesn't, the sooner he learns them, the more successful his marriage will be. The sooner he learns how to cooperate, take up the responsibility, serious commitment to the marriage, the earning of money and household duties, etc., on both parties. This cooperation, this responsibility, and this surrender. Then he makes advancement in this ashram. And advancement in general, in life in general, and these are good qualities for human life, developing all the virtuous good qualities, and they're most necessary qualities to enter Brajadham. Because Brajadham is full of surrender. It's a land of surrender. Land of love. Love means surrender. There's no one more surrendered than Radharani. They're so surrendered, they've given up everything. Laja Dharma, Pati Dharma, Loka Dharma, Sri Dharma, every Dharma, they surrendered. Sarva Dharma, Prityaja, Mame Kamashanaram Braja. They've abandoned everything and surrendered everything. There's no one more surrendered than the gopis, Vajagopis, and they're responsible. They've taken full responsibility for Krishna's pleasure 24 hours a day. And they cooperate. They're very quiet. You have to see how they're synergistically they all move and act together. Yogamaya and Purnamasi and Mukara and Madhumangal and Sridham and Subal. They all cooperate very synergistically for the pleasure and happiness of Krishna. So Grihastha life is like a springboard into Vrindavan. It's a springboard into the spiritual world. You can land and jump off the springboard, or like a high dive. You jump up and down on a fiberglass board of Grihastha life, like a high dive. One, two, three. And you go up, and then do a jackknife right into Nikunja Lila. Jackknife is a type of dive. And go straight into the nectar pool of Braja Lila with these three qualities. Cooperation, responsibility, surrender. C-R- S. Krishna. CRS is like Krishna, right? Krishna. So it all ends up with Krishna. Hare Krishna.